Iambic Audiobooks presents Homing by Stephanie Dommett, read by Lynette Geisel. Chapter 1, Part A. Leah woke to the cooing of the birds. The room was dark, though slices of light crept in at the sides of the curtains. Red silk covered the cages, which were perched atop the bookcase. From beneath the fabric she heard the ruffling of feathers and the soft guttural cries of the mourning doves. "Get up," she imagined them saying, "let us try again." She rolled over in the bed, her long black braids a lump at the back of her head. She'd slept curled around her pillows again, and her limbs unfolded slowly in the early morning dark. She thought about ignoring the bird song. She thought about crumpling herself up again, pulling up the duvet around her shoulders, closing her eyes and falling back into oblivion. But that was dangerous, she knew. Better to get up, to get on with it, to try again than to give in before she'd even started. It was good to have the birds depending on her. It meant she had to get up. It wasn't so much that she cared about them one way or the other, though she supposed somewhere inside herself she did. It was more that they would cry and call and cry and call till she got up, drew the silk from their cages, looked to their seat and their water, and finally gave them a task. They were canny creatures. They knew what they were about. They wanted a job. Leah opened her eyes fully and looked again at the cages. She could see the outline of one plump bird. Sandy, she thought. She's pressed right up against the bars of her cage again. Leah let her hands slide down her body in their regular morning inventory, gliding over plump breasts, belly, hips, and thighs. Still there, she told herself. Still all there. At least on the outside. She peeled back the duvet and swung herself up to sitting, feet planted square on the floor. She felt she had to move with authority, since it seemed to be the only thing that could get her moving and keep her moving at all these days. She sat for a moment, hands resting on bare knees. She wanted nothing more than to free fall back into the pillows, but she knew this torpor wasn't helping. It fed itself, this inactivity. "Just get up and write the note," she said out loud. "Do that much, then see about the rest. Do that much and see where you are." She shivered in the cold room and pulled her bathrobe on over her skin. She didn't like the birds to see her naked. They made her skin crawl. All birds did, with their buggy feathers and beady eyes, and the way they seemed to have ideas about things. These two were no different and were, in fact, perhaps a bit worse. They were intelligent. That was part of it. Intelligent enough, anyhow, to find their way out every day and their way back again every night. And though she needed them for that, valued them for that, it still unnerved her to have such sentient beings living in cages on her bookcase. She thought naming them would help. Sandy and Harold, they were. But it only made things worse. Once they were named, they seemed to develop personalities. Sandy was a go-getter. Harold more even-tempered, more laid back, but still, he got the job done. He was a plotter. Sandy liked to shake things up. And once they had names and personalities, things seemed to go downhill for Leah. She was reconsidering the ethics of keeping them in a cage, but the alternative, letting them have the run of the house, was too horrifying to contemplate. She worked hard to hide her revulsion from them, but she lived in fear that her careful facade would slip and that someday soon Sandy and Harold would divine the truth. Leah hated the birds, but she needed them, desperately. Sandy began to scold as Leah moved toward the cages. She pulled the red silk covers off and fixed the birds with what she hoped was a cool gaze. She wondered if she was fooling them. The look on Sandy's face indicated otherwise, but Harold was just as placid as ever. She began to think she preferred the male bird, but of course that was nothing new, and she had to admit such preferences were the root of a number of her troubles. And also, he was a pigeon, and she would do well to keep things in perspective. His brain was the size of a piece of gravel, if that, and whatever personality he seemed to have was certainly her own projection. She shook some seed into the feeding dishes in the cages, disengaged the water bottles, and took them to the bathroom sink, where she rinsed and refilled them. She popped them back in their brackets and said,
"It won't be long now, guys.
Let me just make the coffee and think about it some, and I'll get you set up before too long. Just hang in there." She didn't know when she'd started talking like a folksy camp counselor, but she had, and there it was. Not much she could do about it now, and besides, she really didn't talk to very many people these days, so what did it matter how she sounded? She was pretty sure the birds didn't care, and if they did, oh well. They were birds. They would simply have to cope. She padded down the stairs to the kitchen, and in her head she began to compose that day's note. She wondered about striking the right tone. She wanted to be forceful, but not too aggressive. It was important, she felt, to proceed with caution. And though she had not yet received a reply, or really a sign of any kind, the birds, at least, returned to her with their note sheaths empty. So she had to assume the letters were hitting their mark. She decided to assume they were, rather. It was better that way. In the kitchen, she scooped coffee beans into the grinder, pushed the lid down, and flipped the switch. The sudden noise made the cat jump, and she said, "It's okay, buddy. It's just the coffee grinder. Same thing every morning, right?" "Jesus, I'm turning into St. Francis of Assisi," she thought, but didn't say. She was already doing a fair bit of talking out loud when she was alone, and sure, she could pass it off as talking to the birds or the cat, but she was only marginally comfortable with that. She dumped the ground coffee into the basket filter, filled the pot with water, poured that into the machine, flipped the switch, and waited for the familiar burbling and the soothing aroma. She didn't even care anymore if she actually drank a cup of coffee, but making it had become very important. It was a thing people did in the morning, and so she would do it, and it would help keep her on track. At least that was the plan. So far, it had worked, but she had to admit she didn't hold out a lot of hope for it long term. Still, she tried not to be pessimistic too far into the future. She tried to keep her crabbing to a situational basis. Not always easy, but a worthy goal to strive for, she thought. As the coffee maker cranked and groaned, she leaned against the counter and drew a pencil from the pocket of her robe. She twirled it between her fingers and thought. The cat leapt lightly from his perch on the rocking chair in the corner and stretch-walked across the kitchen toward her, purring intently. He got up close and wound around her ankles a bit, purring the entire time. "You want crunchies?" she asked him in a completely superfluous way. It was obvious what he wanted, and inevitable that she would put out. She scooped out a cup of dry food and slid it into his bowl. He immediately abandoned her ankles and applied himself to his breakfast, eating noisily. This left her free to think. She tapped the pencil's eraser end against her teeth, tasting a hint of the rubber. It made her think of September, the real New Year, the true time of renewal. How she longed for the feeling she got from a fresh package of lined loose-leaf paper, or the ever-expanding realm of the possible, represented by a new box of pencil crayons, their points all uniform and perfect. But what she felt instead was the grubbiness of midwinter, all brown snow and chapped lips, and scarf that smelled like 4 months' worth of expelled breath trapped forever in synthetic fibers. She sighed and closed her eyes. Maybe she should go back to bed after all, turn off the coffee maker, put the silk back over the cages, slip back into bed, and back into dark unconsciousness. But no. She'd done that already, for too many days. She had to work on the project. She had to at least write the note. She pulled a square of royal blue paper from the pack of origami sheets on the counter. She licked the end of the pencil as she'd seen it done in old movies. She didn't notice if it had any effect on the graphite, but she'd grown to like the ritual. And a little bit, she'd grown to like the taste. She thought for a moment, elbows leaning on the countertop, her butt sticking out and swaying gently, absently. Finally, her hand began to move over the square of paper. "After midnight," she wrote, "in the silence, intensive. The machines turned away discreetly, as if to grant you privacy at last. She stopped writing, looked over at the cat, who sat back from his bowl and licked his paw. She looked back at what she'd written, hesitated for a moment, and then nodded. "Okay," she said out loud. "All right, okay."
She folded it into a little frog and, cradling it in the palm of her hand, climbed the stairs once more to her bedroom where the birds waited, one trusting and one impatient for her return.
In the house next door, Henry sat in his boxer shorts, his guitar perched on his knee, one hand around its neck. A joint burned in the saucer on the floor, and Henry scratched his belly absently with his free hand. There was a lot going on, that was for sure, but he knew he had to try to stay on schedule. He looked again at the song list taped to the side of his guitar, to its shapely hip. He shook his hair out behind him, thinking it might help to clear his head. He strummed a few experimental chords, cleared his throat, gazed out the window, waited to feel that the moment was upon him, waited to feel like it was time to get to it. And get to it he must. If he didn't practice, he couldn't play, and if he didn't play, he'd never get a record deal. And without a record deal, he'd be just another dirty hippie working at the juice bar forever, or selling hemp bracelets on the street, playing hacky sack between customers.